This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
There's two groups of people that come out of the basement, people who tell and people who don't tell.
Who wouldn't want to admit that they shopped at the basement?
It was a badge saying that you knew that you were kind of an insider. I go to Filene's basement, you know.
That was journalist Mike Wallace at the end there. Wallace grew up in Brookline, and he's one of many people interviewed in Voices from the Basement, a new documentary about that longtime Boston landmark in Downtown Crossing, Filene's Basement. The screen films for a large audience for the first time tonight at Dean College in Franklin. But filmmaker Michael Bavaro is here in the studio first to give us a preview. Welcome to Radio Boston, Michael.
Thank you. Nice to have us.
Also with us is Sue Edbrill. She's the co-executive producer of the film, and Sue's grandmother once worked at Filene's.
Yeah, that's why we did the film. This was as a tribute to my grandmother who worked there for 40 years.
Ah. She worked at Filene's, not Filene's Basement.
Oh, no. She worked at Filene's Basement
for
40 years.
Okay. Because, Michael, your film touches both on Filene's and Filene's Basement with a bit more focus on Filene's Basement.
Yeah. I mean, you have to really go back through the history of Filene's before we get to the basement, which came out in 1909.
The story came out in 1909.
Yeah, the story of Filene's goes back to 1848. And William Filene built a series of department stores, and the basement was part of the Filene's department store.
Eventually, his sons got involved. He originally was at a different location somewhere on Washington Street, finally landed at that great corner where it was until very recently.
Not too far away. It was right across the street.
Where it was.
Let's start with the most basic thing about Filene's, which is its name. Because there are people in your film who call it Filene's, and there are people who call it Filene's. Now, here's the clip where we hear some people weighing in on that difference. And the first person we're going to hear here is former Governor Mike Dukakis.
Who called it Filene's? I don't know. It's kind of affected, I think.
Filene's is what we were brought up on. And it seems as though people from outside of the Boston area, anybody that came in from New York, Filene's.
Filene's. It's interesting, isn't it?
The family name is Filene. However, the store's name is pronounced Filene's.
So there we hear Mike Dukakis saying that it's an affect when people call it Filene's. Although, Michael, there's an interesting piece in your story also that says that William Filene was actually originally William Katz.
Wilhelm Katz.
So tell us how he got from Wilhelm Katz to William Filene.
Well, the legend goes that he was Wilhelm Katz. He came to America and wanted to Anglify his name and give it a French flair. So he took the French word for cat, which was feline, and somehow juxtaposed the words, the letters differently, and came up with Filene.
So a misspelling, a mispronunciation, somehow we got Filene's.
Yeah, and there's another story, too.
Well, I think the different pronunciations reflect all the different, that you had to leave your status at the door, that you could pronounce it however you wanted to pronounce it, but that the thing about Filene's Basement, and there was no other store like this in the world, is that you had equal access to quality, high-quality goods.
Listeners, we're taking calls, by the way, and we want to know if you have Filene's Basement memories that you want to share, whether you shop there, whether you work there, whether you got some killer buy that you still remember and you want to brag about. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Sue, you were just talking about this idea that it was for equals. And I think people might not remember that it used to be that certain people shopped in one type of place and certain people shopped in another, and Filene's was open to everyone.
Well, it's not that as much as that salespeople might have attended differently to a Boston Brahmin from Beacon Hill versus a waitress from Dorchester. And the difference was that when you walked into Filene's Basement to, say, the lingerie booth where my grandmother worked, it didn't matter if you were a Brahmin or if you were a waitress.
We have a clip from the movie that addresses the very issue you're talking about, Sue. And here's that one.
Once you step through the door, you leave your status at the door. It doesn't matter if you're a Boston Brahmin or if you're a waitress from Dorchester. You have equal access to quality goods.
I mean, you'd be rubbing shoulders with doctors and dentists and lawyers and judges and legislators.
I mean, here was Boston with this reputation for stuffiness and excessive formality and people worrying too much about their dignity. And here was this wonderful kind of bazaar.
Someone could be buying a fur coat next to someone buying a felt hat. I mean, you could just buy a whole spectrum of clothes.
That was Barney Frank's voice in there. That was Mike Dukakis' voice. And they're talking about the idea that the well-heeled and the poor bargain hunters went there as well. So bargain hunting, obviously, was the thrill at Filene's basement. So maybe, Sue, you can explain for people who might not remember or might not know about it what this automatic markdown approach was at Filene's basement.
Well, I'm going to actually have Michael explain that. I can explain the psychology of it, but I'll have you explain how it actually worked.
The way it worked was it was an auction in reverse concept where if they had high-quality merchandise that would be brought in, and if it didn't sell after 7 days, it would be marked down 25%. Another 7 days would go by, it would be marked down to 50, and then another 7 days, 75%, until if it was left on the shelves, it was given away to charity. But usually that stuff sold in the first week.
Well, your film mentions that originally when this idea was announced, people called it Filene's Folly because they thought everyone's just going to wait till the price drops and then they'll come and get it for cheap or for free.
Right.
And instead, as you just said, most clothing was bought right away, but that didn't stop some people from trying to game the system.
Right.
That's where the psychology comes in.
And actually, so Sue, before we talk about the psychology, we have another piece from the film that I think is worth hearing that talks about gaming the system. In fact, we have Mayor Menino confessing that he did try to game the system.
People would hide things, knowing that if they didn't sell, the price would go down automatically, and so they would be able to get the lower price. It was very devious. It was a very different time.
You always put in the wrong size, around the back, around the corner.
Sometimes, say a shirt, they would hide it in the men's department or in the shoe department.
Sometimes you're able to survive a couple of days till it gets down to the next marking period. But that's the game you play down the basement.
But you know, the floor supervisor, in the morning, it was part of her job to go underneath these booths and see what merchandise is there. And she would take it out. She wouldn't let anybody hold the thing.
So, Michael Bavar, we find out in your film that some people had jobs at Filene's to find the things that shoppers tried to stash and come back and get later at a goodbye.
Yeah, that was the whole part of the job. You would go around every morning and pick up the stuff that was hidden in different places where you wouldn't think to look.
We have a caller who is from Bridgewater who wants to bring up another very classic thing about Filene's, and this is Karen. Karen, what do you remember about Filene's or Filene's basement?
Hi. I don't know if the film touches on this aspect, but when I was a very little girl in the early 60s, I'd go in there with my mom, and I would see all these older women in their undergarments trying on clothes in the aisles, and I would be completely horrified, and my mom would say, you know, just slip off your slacks and try on this skirt, and I'd be, no way, and that stayed with me forever.
Karen, the movie does address that, and we can listen to that portion right here.
You know, everything came off.
To see the men all along the rail on the stairway.
I wasn't there.
Watching the girls.
They'd come down the basement and watch the women undress, and we'd have to get security to pull them out of the store. Never. They'd just have their panties and their bra. It's all
sometimes
I'll
leave the bra on.
Right.
It's the fascinating part of Filene's basement.
That was a free ride for me.
That was entertainment.
So, Michael Bavaro, I remember when I used to go to Filene's basement and I first walked in the changing room, I realized everyone had to drop their clothes together. There are no individual stalls for changing. So why wouldn't women just stand in the aisles and change if it's basically group changing in the changing room, too?
Yeah, except men would come down during their lunch hour and watch on the stairs. And they had dressing rooms for men, but not for women. But then they did finally get dressing rooms for women.
There are many things about Filene's basement that were, in terms of gender differences, very, very interesting. Men were really attended to in Filene's basement. Saleswomen would call them up and say, we're having a suit sale. Make sure you come in this Thursday morning. As opposed to for the women, there were no dressing rooms.
Huh.
Until the 1980s.
Until the 80s? It took
that long. Until the 1980s when one woman filed a discrimination suit, and that was changed.
We have also a caller from Stowe who has a memory. This is Iris. And Iris, what do you remember about Filene's basement?
Well, I remember this story that my younger sister told me, and she tells it almost, I'd say every year at the holiday time, that when she was in her 20s, she worked at Filene's basement and had hung her leather coat in the back room where all the employees put their belongings, and by the end of the day, her leather coat had been ticketed and put on the floor and sold. That's the frenetic pace of Filene.
Thanks for that, Iris. Michael, is that probably myth, or do you think that actually could have happened?
No, I think that happened. In fact, Peter Mohegan talked about how one of his sports coats got picked up and put back on the floor,
this
too.
This is someone who is also in your movie.
Right.
We also have a caller from Revere, and this is Edna. Edna, you're in your, you're 80 years old now, but you have strong memories of Filene's Basement?
I do.
What do you remember?
It was really one of my first memories because my mother took me down there with two older sisters. So the four of us would go around, and my mother would have me sit on those steps that were there. And years later, when my daughter was looking for a wedding gown, we went down because of the large wedding gown display that they always had.
Oh, sure. Edna, this reminds me that in the movie, Michael Bavaro interviews someone who says that when her mother used to say, let's go into town, what that really meant was, let's go to Filene's Basement. They were synonymous.
Yeah, it really started there. That was the center of the hub.
So Sue and Michael, the caller just mentioned the bridal gowns. And, of course, that annual running of the brides where, what was it, $99 dresses, and it would cause almost literal rampages. We have some footage from that as well, I believe.
We were interested in, you know, obviously, that what creates this unique consumer behavior. Standing in that either freezing cold or burning up hot basement staircase, being pushed and shoved, creating communities around with people that you meet, fighting with other people.
We will negotiate for this gown! This is a 6 and a 4, if you like.
It was February 1987, and I'd just gotten engaged on a weekend.
A lot of it is, I didn't even want to go. But I went down there anyway. Or I just happened to go in on my lunch hour.
And I really didn't have plans to go. But later on in the morning, I said, you know what? I'm going to take a walk down during my lunch hour.
So you see a lot of providence or luck or divine intervention kind of stuff happening.
I just picked it up, and it was kind of like it was calling me.
So that was a Bentley College professor talking about the psychology of shopping at Filene's Basement. And Sue Edbrill, I wonder what your take is on that. Was there something about shopping at Filene's Basement that made it a different experience than shopping anywhere else?
Absolutely. It was about the hunt and about being able to get a bargain and what that felt like psychologically to either hide the item or to just get it at such a discounted price.
There's a point in the movie, Michael, also where people say there are two types, you know, people who either, as I think the intro said, they either want to admit they got a good deal or they would never want to admit it. Is it a badge of honor or is it something you hide?
I think that's a personal opinion for a lot of people, but I think most of the people that we interviewed, it was a badge of honor for them.
Michael, your film also talks about basically the social impact of Filene's Basement. This is the more behind-the-scenes part of the store, which is that it had a health clinic, which was very progressive because employers didn't provide health insurance at that time. It created a system where workers could arbitrate disputes. So that was quite interesting, and that was not usual.
Yeah, and this was things that we uncovered in making the film. We saw how progressive they were for their time and really wanted to put that out there so that people were aware of the importance of what the Filene's contributed to, not just Boston, but I think the country.
Blue Cross Blue Shield came out of that
initiative. Right, Michael, your movie says that sort of the template for Blue Cross Blue Shield was this initial health clinic idea. We have a caller from Roxbury. This is Lorraine. And Lorraine, what's your Filene's Basement memory?
Hi, my memory is of my late sister Diane, and we would love to give her compliments, but we would become a little terrified because we would always hear Filene's Basement 9 years ago, Filene's Basement 7 years ago. So we would always feel really showed up by this. And my sister Ara used to say, "I'm going to visit William," and we would say, "Who's William?" And then she'd say, "William Filene's."
So she was very, very proud of her deals. Those were definite badges of honor.
Yes.
Thank you very much for that call. Michael, at the end of your film, you have footage of the last day when the store closed. And people were actually very hopeful because they believed they were going to reopen in 2 years. Well, 2 years has passed, and that is still a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
Things have not turned out the way they thought it would.
No, and I think, you know, this is sort of the poster child of what's happened in the commercial real estate. And now there's some hope. Possibly there's some developers that are interested in buying it and turning it around. But I don't think it would be the same putting anything else back in there. It would be like putting the Yankees in Fenway Park. You know?
We'll see. Maybe Filene's basement will rise again. Michael Bavaro, thank you very much for coming in. And Sue Edbrill, thanks also to you. Michael Bavaro and Sue Edbrill's documentary, Voices from the Basement, has its first screening before a large audience tonight at 6:30 at Dean College in Franklin, followed by a panel discussion. You can find more information and a trailer on the movie from our website, wbur.org/Boston. If you can't make it tonight, WGBH-TV will be airing the film in December. Michael and Sue, thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.